this is the moment now when the audience finally has a chance to ask questions of all the speakers, and we hope the speakers will grasp the microphone when they answer and talk right into the mic. Those mics need to have very close to the mouth to talk.
Hi, I'm Larry Frieders. Dr. Gironi, there was one slide where you slipped right across the bottom a comment about the glutamate excitatory activity. And we've been doing some work with just pain relief in the Chicago area. And one of the things that keeps coming up over and over is the impact of free glutamates on pain, fibromyalgia. And I'm wondering if your research is kind of pointing in the same direction, that we are living in an environment full of free glutamates. In fact, it's added to a lot of our foods, that if possibly this might be a side effect of this research, is to identify elements that are impacting the pain. And in this case, free glutamates, or even glutamates in food.
Thank you for... Can you hear me?
Just tap it, see if it's working.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Thanks for your comment. The mechanism I hypothesized is comes from Ogro-Yosh hypothesis, and it suggested that glutamate can be the responsible of oligodendrocyte death. And it suggests that naltrexone can inhibit nitric oxide, a very important factor involved in enhanced glutamate level. So if naltrexone can inhibit nitric oxide synthesis, reducing nitric oxide and increase the activity of a glutamate transporter, it prevents oligodendrocyte death. So every one of you know that oligodendrocyte death is supposed to be the mechanism of demyelination. So I know that in primary progressive form, the neurodegenerative process is very important. And if LGN acts in this way, it could be useful. We didn't think to measure metabolites like glutamic acid or something like this to investigate or to confirm this hypothesis, maybe in a future study.
Anyone else? No, here, Art.
No. Hi, Art Mellor. This is a question about the study in Mali. I was wondering if you could just tell us approximately what you think the cost of doing a trial of that size would be.
Into the mic.
We budgeted for $263,000.
Okay.
$263,000.
Okay, thanks.
Other? Yes, in the back, red shirt.
Hello, I have a question for Dr. Meir. I wondered why you excluded patients from taking benzodiazepine during your trial. I know that opiates would be excluded, but I wondered why you particularly mentioned the benzos.
Well, there are some reports that they could also work on receptors on opiates, so we wanted to exclude this possibility. It's not proven, but just to be secure.
Yes, Dr. Tima.
Thank you. I want to make a comment first. Unfortunately, I won't talk about MS because I come from the equator, so we are very far from MS.
We're hoping you're going to ask a question.
Thank God for that. We have enough burden. I happen to have tumbled across LDN, and as a physician, I was faced with the challenge of HIV. That's why I'm very pleased with Senyi, and I'm glad that I met him today. And I hope he keeps the good work. Africa is too difficult. But my question to the panel is, when you talk about protocols, I bother about the ethical question of, because when the picture you see of HIV is not the picture we see. The ethical question where some people are really going down and you wait to put them on placebo. Couldn't we do studies a little bit shorter and then crossover early enough, or based on the other issues we've seen, because we're talking about a disaster you cannot imagine. And we are also dealing with a world that is controlled by pharmaceuticals. So you will not easily have, you won't find easy protocols, or the pointers you've been using might not be the adequate pointers. So could we think of something along that line, particularly about those who don't have a long chance? Unfortunately, most of the panelists, and he's not a physician, talking about on HIV.
Who would like to try that question on the panel? Go ahead,
I'm not a physician, but I'll try. Regarding HIV, with the placebo, the first point is, if somebody doesn't, in Mali, for instance, you start treating people, either on, if they're below 250 CD4s, so if somebody is above 250 CD4s, you're not giving him any treatment to start with. So when we wanted to include people in the trial, they were going to be above 250. So you were not going to have the problem with giving antiretrovirals. ARVs to somebody, and then, you know, some people are on placebo, and you would have them, and you would lose them because they're having placebo. That was the first concern we looked at. We thought, well, they're above 250, so we won't have a problem. But then, if let's say they were above 250, and during the trial, they start having opportunistic infection. In Mali right now, you have a plan where ARVs are given free. So they would automatically get the ARVs. So in terms of ethics, I think that was, well, we thought that was right. But to give ourselves even more, to be sure that we were not going to have any problem, we dropped the placebo thing. Because at the end of the day, what we want to demonstrate is just that it's efficient and it's safe. So if we can just have one group, and that group is having enough, you know, is having enough good response, then we have our drug. We don't have to have a double placebo trial, really, down there. And then if you have enough people taking the drug, if it's a success, then you would build up enough data to prove that LDN is okay without even talking about the placebo.
I have a question for Linda Elsgood. Linda, what are your prospects for having this trial funded, and when might it happen in the UK?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Talk right into the mic.
Right. Yeah. Well, we were hoping to actually start this year, but as you probably know, the MS Society turned us down for funding. So we are hoping now and working towards early next year of having the funding and getting the neurologists in place. Good news is there are 5 neurologists now in the UK that are prescribing LDN.
Wonderful.
But they only have 1 or 2 patients, so they are being cautious and are just monitoring these patients first.
Right.
But things are moving forward.
Wonderful. Dr. Meir, also I have a question. Pardon me, I'm just squeezing in my question. When are you planning to take the next step forward for another trial?
As I just suggested, we might take part in the study of Dr. Gironi, just contribute patients, because I think, we have to have 3 different studies. Well, the one is what we have made about symptomatic effects, which might also be prolonged for some time, not so short as we did it.
Right.
But I think this is the effect on receptors, receptor effect, which might be different from other effects, which we want to see. So the other studies we might make is how it works against relapses, how it works on the immune system. This is the next question. And the third one, which is maybe most important, is does it prevent degeneration? Because it might be a different mechanism in all these effects. And there must be different studies for it. This is what I wanted to say.
Thank you. We get reports quite regularly from the LDN group of people going back for MRIs and finding no change whatsoever, no lesions whatsoever. It's very heartening. Other questions from the audience? We have a question in the fourth row. I recognize that woman.
I wondered why, Dr. Gironi, you arrived at 3.75, and there were different, you know, ranges of the medication, and I'm curious about that. For personal reasons.
Our choice was just before considering anecdotal cases and considering that higher doses than 3.75 can increase spasticity and can give some sleep disturbance. So we chose to remain between 3 and 5 milligrams.
Right. A question in the rear left there. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Crowley. I'm from Ireland, and I'm using LDN for the last couple of years. And I'm very interested in a few of the items that came up. First of all, my experience tends to confirm what Dr. Mayer has given as results, that about a third of patients respond very, very well. The problem is to pick those. And other patients, and this is a bit disconcerting, because from the site that you see on the website, you feel that it's all 100% positive. Mm-hmm. That's not my experience. There are patients who do have side effects, mm-hmm. whom I have had to stop on the drug, but there's also patients who've had wonderful effects. Mm-hmm. And so that is a clinical problem to decide. Now, I have this theory that when we have a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, which can be made very much earlier with scanning now, that perhaps we should use LDN like they use aspirin in cardiovascular disease. What have you got to lose? Because in Ireland, none of our neurologists will even talk about this drug.
Right.
It's serious in that you can't even get a debate. But I'm very delighted with the research in beta endorphins, because I think that's very significant. Because there's a new paradigm theory, I think, emerging about multiple sclerosis, that, for instance, it's not just demyelinization, that the axon is already being destroyed or damaged from very early on. And this is relatively new research, and we really have to begin thinking in different ways, that there are two processes going on, at least, maybe more. So thank you for all the thing. But my experience is that about a third of people are responders. And it's not 100% positive in that sense, you know.
Right. It's interesting to hear that comment. That happened to be a great stumbling block at the very outset of the use of low-dose naltrexone, and by Harry's experience. Here was a world where suddenly there was this unknown infectious disease, and people were coming down with it, as you mentioned in his talk. It's called ARC and HIV/AIDS. And he did his trial, and he saw that they weren't getting opportunistic infections on low-dose naltrexone. Opened an office here in Manhattan for the treatment of HIV/AIDS. I mean, he had an answer to it, and arranged meetings with groups of doctors, all of whom were interested in treating AIDS. And he told them about low-dose naltrexone. People weren't responding. People weren't responding. Well, what does that mean? Well, they didn't feel any different. Nothing changed. Obviously, it wasn't working. So by Harry went on treating his patients with HIV/AIDS, and they didn't deteriorate, because when you measured their CD4 cells from year to year, they were staying the same. Whereas the other groups on all the other tried and no medications, they were dropping. The CD4 cells were dropping. So the answer is that the central effect of low-dose naltrexone is to avoid progression of the problem, because you're strengthening the immune system. Those patients in Ireland who say, it's not helping me, you know, I'm not getting my symptoms going away, if you follow them from year to year, you would find that the vast majority are not progressing. They may not find symptomatic improvement, but at least in Bihari's experience, he's not seeing progression of MS and allied autoimmune diseases. So I would say the effectiveness of low-dose naltrexone has to be thought of from that perspective also. It's true. It's very dramatic when people write in about all the symptoms that are improving, but not everybody's so lucky to get that. That's sort of the confetti on the whipped cream. But the whipped cream is that disease is not going to progress. Any other questions for the panel? In the back row?
Hi, I have a question for Linda. My name is Karen Chiel, and I was actually recently diagnosed with MS, so I'm very interested in the low-dose naltrexone results. And I was wondering if you found that people who take low-dose naltrexone, if there is a differential response based on whether they do other types of complementary treatments, such as the Swank diet or anything else. Like, does the low-dose naltrexone seem to enhance certain things, or do you think it's best as a standalone treatment? Or I don't know if you have
any comments. May I say before the panel responds, Linda might want to respond to that. We're going to have a panel of patient advocates later in the day, and I know they're going to have a lot to say about that as well. So it's a very interesting question. Thank you.
Right. Well, we've had nearly 300 people respond now to an LDN survey. And one of the questions were they taking supplements, vitamins, were they following diet? The biggest majority of people that had the greatest improvement were taking supplements and following a low-fat diet. I think anything you can do to actually give the LDN a chance is a good idea. Okay.
I'm going to applaud the panel, and we're going to stop the Q&A now because we just ran out of time. We're going to take a little stretch break, and then we're going to come back for the next panel.